Our series of lessons on some of the ingredients of family happiness, I want to talk tonight about the importance of joy in our families. And I struggle with the word to use to call this lesson. In one sense, it sounds like double talk to say that joy is an ingredient of family happiness. Almost sounds like saying the same thing. But when I use the word joy, I'm talking really about what we have in mind when we use the word merriment. So for lack of a better term, I want to call it joy, but I hope that we can, in our minds, distinguish between happiness and joy. I think from a biblical standpoint, it's important for us to understand that there is a difference between those two. Joy is a deeper quality. It's a more substantial quality, and it is possible to have joy even when at the moment we may not have much happiness. And so I'm talking not just about happiness, but about something that a family needs to have in order to have the kind of happiness that God wants us to have in this life under the sun that we are living. The book of Ecclesiastes recommends that we take a joyful approach to life. While there certainly are things to grieve about in this world, that's not the whole story. Even at its worst, there is much in this world that is still of God's making and can be received with gratitude and enjoyed. It's not too strong a word to use for that. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24, Solomon says, "There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I?" Solomon certainly was in a position with his wealth and his privileges to enjoy many more things than you and I have access to. And so he says, God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. And over in chapter 9, at verse 7, Ecclesiastes 9 and 7, he says, "Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has accepted your works. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil." And then with respect to the husband and wife relationship, he says in verse 9, "Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun." Almost every time I read that passage, it reminds me of a scenario in a home that I was in a number of years ago. Brock was actually with me as I now think about this. I was in a meeting, and he had gone with me this night to where we were having supper. And this family, I believe, was the most serious-minded family that I've ever been in the home of. I wondered if they had ever laughed or had ever smiled. And we sat at this very, very formal table. I mean, they didn't have a servant, but a servant would have fit into that scenario. And he was at one head of the table, and she was at the other head of the table, and Brock and I were on one side of the table, and their adult daughter, who was still living with them, was on the other side of the table. And we sat there in our best behavior and ate that meal and talked about very formal subjects, and nobody ever smiled except Brock and I smirked at one another when we looked at one another throughout the whole meal. But I wonder about that man's relationship with his wife and her relationship with him. I just wanted to say, live joyfully with the wife whom you've been given all the days of your life. Would have been a strange concept in that family. And I may have misjudged that family just on the basis of a superficial acquaintance with them, but I'm wondering if that was a happy family. I'm thinking that that relationship might have been bettered by a little bit of merriment once in a while. There's all too little gaiety and mirth and merriment in our families. We struggle with difficulties many times in this age in which we live. The difficulties come at us fast and furiously, and we sometimes can get so burdened down by the weighty, sad side of life that we lose the gaiety that I think should characterize a godly family. Joy is an important concept, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament abounds with examples of God's people enjoying festive occasions. 1 Kings chapter 1 tells us about the coronation of Solomon as the new king of Israel. And in verse 40 of 1 Kings 1, it says, "All the people went up after him, and the people played the flute, their flutes and rejoiced with great joy, so that the earth seemed to split with their sound." It was a joyous occasion, and it was approved by God. In the New Testament, the word rejoice occurs over 70 times. That word count alone would suggest that rejoicing is something that the Lord has in mind for us to do. There are a lot of passages that link Christian living with joy, with rejoicing. Romans 15 and verse 13 is just one example, where Paul says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit." And so, joy is not an incidental concept in the Bible. It's right there at the very heart of all good things. As we said this morning, work, which also is a positive quality in God's scheme of things, work demands that there be intervals of rest and rejuvenation. We see that even in the Lord's life, don't we, with his apostles. Mark chapter 6 tells us that on one occasion, after they had been especially busy, the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said to them, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while." For there were many coming and going. They did not even have time to eat. So just as rest balances work, so I believe joy balances sorrow. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, "There is a time to weep, but there is also a time to laugh. There is a time to mourn, but yes, there is a time to dance with joy." The joy that God approves of needs to be distinguished from several things that he does not approve of. One of them is flippancy and disrespectful, frivolous disregard for things that are very serious in their nature. You still are in Ecclesiastes, in chapter 7 and verse 6, he talks about the laughter of the fool. He says, "Like the crackling of the thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool." This also is vanity. The laughter of the fool is very different than the kind of joy that I'm talking about tonight, that God approves of. We can engage in mirth and merriment without at all being frivolous or disrespectful of the very serious things that there are in life. And certainly the joy of the Christian will not have anything to do with what in the world is called hedonism, just the mindless pursuit of pleasure as the ultimate goal in life. And certainly debauchery and dissipation, just the absolute spending of oneself in pleasure without regard to even right or wrong, that's certainly not what we're talking about. And even in its proper realm, mirth is not the ultimate goal in life. It is a value, but it is not the ultimate value. And even in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, Solomon said that when he set out to find out really what there was that was good in life, and if there was anything in this life that was ultimately good, he tested mirth to see if that would be the thing that would be the highest good in this world, and he found out that it was not. He found out that it was enjoyable as it passed by, but it was not anything that you could hold on to. It was not anything that you'd want to put your ultimate faith in. So we need to keep mirth and joy and those things in perspective and distinguish them from some things that God does not approve of. But in their rightful realm, God wants us, at least occasionally, to enjoy the lighter side of life. The Christian's soberness, and that's a word that is often used in regard to the attitude that we ought to have toward the important things. Being sober, as the Bible uses that word, doesn't mean being unceasingly dour and gloomy and stern. I remember years ago hearing Paul Earnhardt tell the story about an incident that supposedly happened in the colonial days in New England, where the Puritan religion was almost all there was at that time. And Puritan theology basically teaches that enjoyment of any kind of this life is wrong, that God does not approve of any sort of merriment or enjoyment in life. And a young man had, in the middle of the winter when everything was frozen over, had put on his skates and had skated down the river to church services one Sunday morning. And the elders of the church were just incensed at this lack of decorum on the part of one of their young people. And they challenged him about skating to church. And he said, well, everything was frozen over. They said the only way I could get here was to skate down the river. And they determined that that would be all right as long as he assured them that he did not enjoy it. Puritan theology questions any kind of enjoyment of anything in this life. And in our language today, we identify Puritanism with the idea of somebody who just thinks any kind of enjoyment would not be pleasing to God. I don't believe the Bible teaches that doctrine. Too many places we have verses like Philippians 4, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. So what about that in regard to the family? I think there's some characteristics of the godly family that indicate that the godly family is also a joyful family. The joyful family is, number one, a godly family. There's not any inconsistency between godliness and the rightful enjoyment of this life as far as it can be enjoyed. Sin having broken this world, it's not what God intended it to be in the Garden of Eden, and there's a lot of unenjoyable aspects of this life under the sun that were not a part of the original plan. But there's still much to enjoy, and that's not inconsistent with godliness. In fact, joy is listed in Galatians chapter 5 as a part of the fruit of the Spirit. The more godly we become, the more we will be thankful for the privilege of enjoying the things that still are a part of this world, which is our Father's world. And I'm sure you recall in the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus pronounced a series of blessings on certain ones, certain characteristics of godliness. The very word blessed has to do with joy. It means joyous is the one who has purity of heart and so forth and is meek. And it means, you know, blessedness means to live at the highest level of well-being and joy. And so if we really wanted to be a truly joyful family, we'd start out by being a godly family. That wouldn't keep you from having any happiness. That really would be the number one key to having real joy in your family. Secondly, a joyful, merry family will be a family that has some appreciation for the good and the beautiful. It is a shame, isn't it, that the ugly side of life sometimes so dominates the news that we lose sight of the fact that there still are a lot of good and beautiful things to rejoice about in this world. And we need to learn to discipline our minds to focus on those things from time to time. Philippians 4, verse 8, just that verse where Paul tells us that there's some things we need to think on or meditate on. He says, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, and listen to this one, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and anything praiseworthy, think on these things. We need to feed our minds on the joyous side of this world. Broken though it is by sin, that's never the whole story. And we need to acquire a taste for good things and beautiful things that will bring laughter, enjoyment to our hearts. And then I would say that a family that is a godly family and a joyful family will have learned the ability of doing what Solomon talks about in Ecclesiastes, and that is accepting joy right now rather than someday. Solomon recommends a philosophy of life which sees these things of this life as temporary pleasures given by God for us to enjoy today. And if you don't enjoy them today, then Solomon basically says you will have missed out on what could have been enjoyed in this life. If you don't enjoy it today, you're just losing life, because today's is the only day in which it can be enjoyed. We need to redeem the time as far as our families are concerned, and enjoy our families while we have them. and seize every opportunity for merriment and for the lighter side of life and our family relationships. Someday may never arrive. We think, well, we've got to work our way out of this ditch that we've gotten into and all these problems that we're facing, and then we'll have some lighter moments as a family. Very hazardous to put off the enjoyment of daily family life until some supposed better time comes. It usually just does not. If we don't see what there is about today to enjoy, we're probably not going to see what there is about tomorrow to enjoy either. The other side of that, of course, is that our families and all of the joyous, lighter things that we enjoy day by day in our families, those were never meant by God to be anything more than things that we enjoy and then let go of. We sometimes get pretty possessive, don't we, about this bowl of happiness that we're in with our families, and we don't want that ever to change. And we get such a grip on that that we think, I will never willingly let go of this. And God would say, you'd better learn how to let go of it. None of that was ever meant to be anything more than a passing pleasure, a daily joy that you enjoy while it is yours, knowing that it won't always be yours. We'll give every bit of that up when we die, and most of us will give up most of it before we die. God didn't mean it to be permanent. He meant it to be something that is enjoyed while it passes by. So we need to do that. Anything in this world that we can't enjoy and then let go of has probably become an idol to us that may destroy our souls. Certainly we need to learn to be grateful for the members of our family. The most joyous families that I know of are families that really do appreciate one another. And then they don't mind letting you know that they are glad to be a part of the family that they're a part of. It makes me very uncomfortable when I go into homes and people will get me aside and complain about other members of the family. Or the wife will want me to talk to the husband, try to whip him into shape while I'm in their home, or vice versa. Or they want me to talk to one of their children and straighten them out. What a joy it is occasionally to be in homes where, despite faults and failings and foibles, everybody recognizes that they are privileged to be a part of that family circle, and they are grateful for the other members of the family. That produces joy. That helps to produce joy. Spouses should appreciate and enjoy one another. Look back at Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 18. Proverbs 5 and 18, Solomon said, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. And obviously children are joyful gifts from God, aren't they? If your quiver is full of them, as the expression occurs in Psalm 127, then we need to be grateful for the blessing that's involved in that. And then what about laughter and good humor and wholesome fun? Proverbs 15, verse 13 recommends that a merry heart makes a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. There is a time to mourn, and there's a sense in which that teaches us more about the important things in life than laughter does. But if there's a time to mourn, there's also a time to laugh, and we need to learn to enjoy that when those times present themselves, rather than letting them go by unenjoyed simply because we've got too much to do. And then I would suggest that something as simple as warmth and cordiality and friendliness are a part of a joyful family. I've often wondered about the different homes that the Lord went into. The Lord and I at least have this in common, that we are single men. The similarity may end there, I don't know. But I can relate to the Lord going into a lot of homes as an unmarried man. And you just wonder what a different feeling there would have been in the home of, say, Mary and Martha and Lazarus, where Jesus apparently really enjoyed going. They were close friends of his, as opposed to the home of Simon, the Pharisee, that he was in on another occasion. And Simon kind of frowned upon the enjoyment of some aspects of that situation. I don't doubt that even though the Lord had very important work to do in this world, that he would have enjoyed being in the home of people like Mary and Martha and Lazarus. That it would have brought happiness to his heart to enjoy those things, even though in the greater scheme of eternity, those earthly happinesses are not nearly the most important thing. The Lord would have welcomed those occasional times of just friendliness and a cordial reception in somebody's home. I've often wondered if the Lord were to come into our homes, would he enjoy the visit? Or would he be glad when it was over to get out of there and go someplace where things were a little bit lighter? We go to two extremes, obviously. There's some families that are so frivolous there's never a serious thought, but other families where there is never even a smile. And I think the Lord, like all of us, would have preferred being in homes where there was some warmth and some friendliness. Let me make some suggestions for increasing the joy and the merriment in our families. But one thing, we need to make a conscious decision to experience the joy that this world offers. Joy is not an automatic thing. It's a decision. Was it Abraham Lincoln who said most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be? That's true. We need to decide that we are, whatever it is about this world that the Lord intends us to enjoy, we're going to enjoy it. If that's what he intended it for, then we're going to fulfill his purpose for that and not let it escape us. Another thing in our busy day is that we need sometimes to slow down and relax and just spend time enjoying one another's company. It's so possible anymore to be so busy that we just rush through life and we look back and we say, I didn't enjoy that very much. I was too busy to even think about enjoying it. Most of our lives are just far too harried and hectic. As far as our family lives are concerned, enjoying that family life, we just don't have time to do that. We're too busy here and there and doing all of these things. Families need, if it's necessary, to plan time for activities together, to eat meals together on a regular basis. We've got to resist the temptation for us to just spin off into all of our individual orbits in our families. Parents who are too busy to enjoy their children may later be dismayed to find out how little time their children, now as adults, are willing to give to them. So we need to slow down and enjoy the special time of life that it is when families are together. Another recommendation I would make is one that is very, very hard for me to implement, and it's the advice that's in the phrase, simplify, simplify, simplify. How simple is your life? For all the criticisms that I might make of Quaker theology, the Quakers were very right, I think, in appreciating the simple life. Very often, the simpler life is the more joyous life. Life can get so complicated that it is just impossible to enjoy any lighter moments. And if that's the case, then we need to simplify our lives. Next, I would suggest that we need to try to remain a child at heart. No matter how old you are, I think there's a sense in which the Lord would want us to maintain that youthful zest and relish for life that comes naturally when we are children. One of the things I so much appreciated about my father during the many years that he lived in life, my dad was a very simple man, but he never, to his dying day, lost the childlike wonder at how amazing this world can be. He just never lost the ability to be intrigued and to be excited and to be refreshed and to enjoy things that many people have gotten so tired of they don't even pay attention to anymore. And I really appreciated that about him. It made him have a very joyous life because he held on to that youthful ability to enjoy things. Those of us who get older sometimes become tired and jaded and hard to please, and we need to recover that childlike ability to enjoy the simple pleasures of life. Not anybody any so old as the person who's outlived enthusiasm, So let's hang on to that in a godly sense. And then we need to acquire the knack of seeing the lighter side of life. We need to appreciate humor when it comes along, because it just does on a fairly regular basis. I said to somebody this morning, we were talking about this global warming that we've had this winter, and the Lord must be chuckling somewhere over our puny efforts to control this world and to figure everything out and to know what we think is going to happen. He must delight once in a while to throw us a curve and to upset our little plans. And we need to hang on to the ability to see the lighter side of life. I think sometimes some of us just take ourselves way too seriously. We take life way too seriously. And in our families, somebody said the most manifest sign of wisdom is continual cheerfulness. One time talked to a man who early in his life had planned to be a philosopher, but he said cheerfulness kept breaking in and it made it impossible to be a philosopher. And so he decided to do something else. The lighter side of life is there to be appreciated. And then it would be obvious, I think, that a godly, joyful family, is going to have some special family occasions and traditions. Some things that family looks forward to on a regular basis because they have become family occasions and family traditions that give a structure of joy to that life. You know, life moves in cycles. The calendar, and we turn the pages of that regularly, and a year goes by, and then a decade goes by. The Lord made this life to be cyclical in nature. He gave us seasons rather than just one same weather all the time. And we need to appreciate that to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. We need regular holidays and special times that give rhythm and structure to our yearly round. If every day was just exactly alike, and there weren't ever any special days that came around and special things that would be done on those special days, it would be a boring, uninteresting life altogether, wouldn't it? As Democritus said, a life without festivities is a long road without ends. And so how many of those traditions do you have in your family? I'm not necessarily talking about the big ones that everybody has as traditions in their family, but things that are unique just to your family. Maybe just occasions and traditions that you have that have grown up in your family that everybody in the family looks forward to, because that's a part of what we do together as a family in the enjoyment of life. Well, Christians of all the people in the world need to experience joys in their family. And I know Paul wasn't talking about the family in Philippians 4, verse 4, but it's certainly pertinent, isn't it, when he said, rejoice. And again, I will say, rejoice. It's remarkable to me that Paul, though he, for all we know, had never been married, certainly was not married at the time he was writing his letters, whether he had previously been married and his wife had passed away, we don't know. Paul may never have been married, but he seems genuinely to have enjoyed the family relationships that others had and rejoiced on their behalf for them at those happy things. And so I think the Lord would say to all of us, whether in our families or in our congregational relationship or just in life in general, that we need to rejoice. And if it's important to rejoice, all the more important to enjoy that life together as families. Somebody said, a joy that is shared is a joy made double. I used to always be amazed when years ago, and when I worked for a publishing company that published books on the Southwest, national parks in the Southwest, and I had to go to the Grand Canyon quite frequently on business. Never been at the Grand Canyon and not seen people enjoying the sight of that together as families. I was usually there by myself. I never got tired of walking to the rim and looking at that amazing sight of that huge ditch that God put in the world at that particular place. And I think I enjoyed just being astonished by the wonder of that. But I would look somewhat with envy at the families and friends who were standing there enjoying that together. Sometimes the children weren't enjoying it as much as the parents thought they ought to be enjoying it. And the parents would have to say, "This is the Grand Canyon." And the children would say, "Well, yes, but where are the rides?" But there's a special enjoyment of something that's enjoyable in and of itself that is all the more merry when there's someone to enjoy it with. And if we have families where we can enjoy life together, then we need to see that that's a very special gift. And so I hope that you'll not think that I'm flippant when I say to you in a godly context that our families need to be characterized by words like gladness and laughter and cheerfulness. I hope that your family is that way. If it is, don't apologize about that. If you need to pay more attention to the serious side of life, that's another lesson that we can talk about in some other time. But I recommend to you having a cheerful family. Well, that leaves us only two lessons in this series, and we'll tend to those at some future time. But we'll put the bookmark there for tonight's lesson. As we always do, we want to end this study with an invitation of the Lord to obey His gospel. We never know when there may be someone in the audience who needs in some kind of a public way to ask for our assistance. If we need to encourage you, if we need to pray for you, and certainly if you need to obey the gospel and to be baptized into Christ, then we hope you would understand that if you have a spiritual need, that is an urgent need, that you dare not postpone or procrastinate until tomorrow. The invitation, if it is for you, if there's some public way we can help you, we hope that you'll come to the front right now and let us know of that as we stand and sing.